This interview with Betsy Blair was conducted on January 27, 2023, in New Paltz, New York, as part of a group conversation. Other voices on this recording include Fran Dunwell. The interviewer is Elizabeth Lojudis.
I grew up in a family. I'm the youngest of three kids. Our parents met in April, were engaged in May, married in June, and my brother came along the following May. And so our family unfolded, and they had almost nothing. My dad had been in the war, sort of our upbringing was, I think, very much a post-war sort of family situation. Both my parents had grown up in the Depression, and that colored how we lived. And it was an interesting time because the Cuban Missile Crisis was happening. And so I remember in my early years having this sense of vulnerability, doing things like having air raid drills where we'd go out in the hallway and crouch down next to the lockers and put our arms over our head to protect ourselves from nuclear bombs. And, you know, it was, I don't know if that colored things, but that's something that just came up. But I grew up in suburban and rural settings. My dad worked for General Electric Company, and in a capacity that required him to move around the country. So I was born in Schenectady, in little community of Rotterdam. My earliest memories are of playing in the backyard under a big willow tree where it was sort of cool and there were bugs and, you know, plants. We moved then to, when I was four, to a farm out in Saratoga County on Jockey Street, a little town called Charlton. And there were no kids around the area. There was a dairy farm on one side and an old family farm on the other side. And so it was really the three of us kids and my mom, and my dad was working a lot. And we had a big garden that involved us. My mom put up food, and we had a big barn and a silo and a chicken coop. And so my play was bothering my brothers, and them in turn instructing me in, one of them got a chemistry set, and, you know, I was the guinea pig in their adoring, you know, little sister. But there, I think I really imprinted even more on the outdoors. We had 17 acres, a lot of little wetlands and ponds, two big old apple trees, and that was my playground. And so later we moved to, when I was right after second grade, moved to a little town outside of Boston called Topsfield that was above the Ipswich River and near the ocean, which was really exciting. So days off, we would go walking on beaches. And we also lived along a rural road across from a cow barn. And my two best friends, both named Betsy, and I would just go roaming the fields and the woods. And we'd go down to tributaries to the Ipswich River and make little dams and find baby bunnies and bring them home. And, you know, that year was pretty idyllic. But lots of outside forts and places, very much in the environment, very much exploring, sort of cut loose to go explore. We then moved to Owensboro, Kentucky, which was a different environment, but there was an undeveloped lot that we called Haunted Hill that had big mulberry trees. And, you know, in addition to learning those important life skills like how to strike a match when you're in fourth or fifth grade, I learned, just more being comfortable in the environment and noticing, you know, stuff, natural stuff in the world. After that, we moved to Illinois, and it was yet another environment to explore, yet other wetlands and muddy streams to explore, and then back to Schenectady, where we're on the edge of development, and similar kind of thing. And I think, you know, I think all that time outside really shaped me and made those places be ones that were comfortable and interesting, and I always liked having wet feet. So that shaped things. And then my parents were both very involved in giving back and community service. And I remember my dad racing off. He'd come home from work and need to go. He'd get a call and it would be time to go give blood because somebody had an Rh factor incompatibility, and the only way they could, you know, a baby was born, they could save them was when people donated blood and they could do a complete transfusion. And my mom would make food for people who needed it. And so that value was inculcated early on too. We lived in Schenectady for 5 years. It was time for me to go off to college. I never went to camp. Camp was the neighborhood, and my friends were the ones who were willing to just go out sort of swamping or hanging out on the, you know, bouncing willow branch. Or in one case, we decided to have a little street fair, and we raided one little ephemeral pond and collected all of the tadpoles that we could out of it to give away as prizes. So there was a little environmental destruction to be made up for. But anyway, I applied to college. I applied with, you know, a remarkable lack of imagination. I applied to the school that both my brothers had gone to, and I applied to the school that my dad had gone to. Got in, went to Tufts University, had the great fortune of, them being tolerant of the fact that I wasn't a very good student my first year. And so I was put on tertiary probation and almost flunked out. But the very nice dean understood, you know, that I was redeemable. And I stayed on and got totally into biology and took all the field courses and lab courses and ended up working for one of the professors, Norton Nickerson, Dr. Nick, he was called, who was a wetland specialist and who testified frequently to get environmental laws, wetlands protection laws passed in Massachusetts. And he also would take us downtown, down to the Capitol, to sort of understand how laws were made and to conservation advisory committee meetings. But he also raised some money to take us to a remote field station in the Bahamas. And I got to go for 2 years, and it was just heaven. It was completely wild. You could swim, you could snorkel. There were there was no one else on this island except for about 14 of us, and there are all kinds of things to be discovered. You know, invertebrates in the water. Internal ponds that he was studying for their highly saline marshes. But if you got up really early and you went out and you crawled along your belly for a little while to sneak up on them, just as it was getting light, you could see some pretty amazing birds. So it went. You know, I watched Dr. Nick sort of performing public service. I watched my parents continuing to perform public service, and I think that really shaped things. I can go on and talk about what came next. and how I got to the Hudson Valley, or I can pause right here and save that for later.
I think you should talk about Alaska and your Japanese, was it Alaska or your Japanese fishing boats, and didn't you live in Italy for a while?
Mm-hmm. So while I was in college, in fact, the day after I graduated from high school, 1973, June 23, 1973, the next day our family flew to Italy because my dad had been transferred to a job there, and my parents lived there for 4 years, and I went with them and spent over the next couple years a total of about 12 months in northern Italy, living in a... talk about culture shock, a skyscraper on the 22nd floor in downtown Milan. And that was another place to explore. It blew out my life experiences in Schenectady. although Schenectady actually was an okay place to grow up. We did a fair amount of exploring up in the Alps. We would, we were all together the first summer, and then it was me and my parents the following summer and also over the holidays. But we would drive up, we'd pick a valley. We had this set of remarkable maps, and we would find a dead end of a road up in the mountains, and we'd drive up to the end, we'd pick up panini rolls and cheese and bring chocolate, and we'd go off and have a hike and a picnic. And so that's one more environment. We had a dog. We'd run into sheep and goats, and then back in the city it was, you know, just so fascinating, just mind-boggling in terms of the art and the food and the buildings and the people and the fashion. The smells of roasted chestnuts in the winter time. So a real eye opener and really fun. And then after college, I worked in Boston for a year. I was the curator of the Phippin Lacroix Herbarium at Tufts University, which was a little room in the basement of a building that subsequently burned. But it engaged me with plant taxonomy and plant ID. When I was in the Bahamas, I did some collecting, and it was good background for me in terms of the part of my work that dealt with plants. after that, I moved to Seattle to connect up with an old friend I'd gone to summer school with in Michigan. And Michigan was in the summer of 1976, and I studied zooplankton, aquatic animals, in Douglas Lake and other lakes in northern Michigan, which is a fascinating place. And I took some other courses there too. And anyway, I met my roommate that summer had moved to Seattle, and I moved out to Seattle, and we lived together with a bunch of people, most of whom were itinerant biologists who were doing, who were going out and doing whale surveys. So they'd go up to the west coast of Alaska and have a gun to protect against polar bears and be looking out for bowhead whales migrating by. So they're doing very exotic stuff. And I, in the meantime, had gotten a job putting, updating fire insurance rating maps in a sort of dingy, smoky office in Seattle, downtown Seattle. And I got a call one day from one of the cluster of friends who did these whale surveys, and he said, do you want to go out in a Polish fishing boat and count fish? And I said, anything, anything, because I was in this building that just, the, All the women were the secretaries, all the men were the fire insurance raiders, and everybody smoked. So a few days later, I started training to become a foreign fisheries observer, and I got, I went through 2 or 3 weeks of training and got together a big basket of gear, learned to ID a few fish, and shipped off to Dutch Harbor. And then the next morning climbed on to a tugboat that took me out to a 90-meter long Japanese fishing vessel. And over the side there were 80 or 90 Japanese men kind of leaning over the rail and looking down to check out the observer. And so they lowered down its basket that was about 3 feet in diameter and 4 feet deep and dumped my gear in, dumped me in, lifted me up and put me over and set me down. And then that was it for 2 months. I was out monitoring their catches. And that was another piece of just a completely different environment that was fascinating. And there were whales. There were a lot of sea lions. There were tons of seabirds. There were, you know, this amazing diversity of fish from 800 or 1,000 feet down. And the invertebrates that came up with them. And so I ended up doing that job. I did 3 2-month tours between 1980 and 1981. My last one was on a mothership, which was a much larger floating factory, basically, and it had 20 catcher boats bringing it fish sort of throughout the day. I got back from that and was trying to think about what's next. You know, that was really fascinating, but 2 months at sea is a long time, and that's not really how I want to spend the rest of my life. And so one of my brothers said, hey, you know, there's this great program at Yale called the School of Forestry. You might want to look into it. And so I did, and it looked fantastic. It looked so perfect. And I had been taking classes in Seattle at University of Washington in environmental studies and the role of scientists in environmental policy and other courses. And so I'd been thinking about graduate school, but something about this just struck me, and it was such a good move. It introduced me to people who became so important for the rest of my life. It gave me a grounding in policy and, you know, thinking and how to approach big problems. I got some field skills, and you know, one of the most important things besides the people I met, some of whom, two of whom are here at this table, was that it imparted a sense of that you need to go be a leader, that you are a leader, you will be a leader. They sat us down and said, you will be leaders. And, you know, I bought it. I thought, okay, that's our job. That's next. And the connection to the Hudson Valley happened there. Fran Dunwell was a Mellon Fellow. And in my last semester, she and I and another friend took on a project working with the New York State Legislature. And I've forgotten, it's not the Apple Pumice Project. We looked at, gosh, I can't even remember. We did something together, and that led to a job with the New York State Legislature, which I held for a month, for a year. After that, Fran said, you know, do you have any interest? I don't know exactly what she said, but she invited me to do some contractual work for her, to rewrite the management plan of this thing called the Hudson River National Estuarine Sanctuary. And I said yes. And the rest, as they say, is history.